Julian Bond is one of the great pioneers of America's civil rights movement. Bond was a founding member of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee and one of the first African Americans ever elected to the Georgia House of Representatives. He has served as president of the Southern Poverty Law Center, and he was a national chair for the NAACP. It's an honor to welcome Julian Bond to this program. And Julian Bond, welcome to Up to Date. Nice to have you.
It's my great pleasure. Thank you.
You've said that Barack Obama's election to the presidency has meant both good things and bad things when it comes to racism in this country. What did you mean?
Well, I think if you just look at the vituperation he's received from some elements in the American population, you have to say that this was not a racial advance in that sense. It was, if anything, a step backward. He's been the subject of, I think, more death threats than any other American president. And the thing that makes him different from other American presidents, he's the only one who's black. And so you've got to think that race is a part of it. Just yesterday, I got something on the email about somebody who had said they wanted to lynch him and make that a national holiday. So he's had a rough way to go.
But how can you call it a step backward when he's actually our first African-American president?
That's the step forward. The step backward. Step backward is the fact of his election.
Mm-hmm.
A sort of cesspool of Americans who do not like him because he's guilty of being president while black.
How surprised were you that he was elected president in the first place?
That he was elected, not at all, but that he was successful as he went along through the primaries. It wasn't until he won in Iowa that I thought he had a chance of winning. If this overwhelmingly white state could give him a rousing endorsement as they did, then I thought he had a chance. But until then, I thought this was a fool's errand and would have been a waste of my time to cast a vote for him.
Hmm. To what extent do you think the very stout, ongoing, really unrelenting opposition from Republicans is due to race? Because you hear that sometimes from our commentators as you read the different websites. What do you make of that?
I think some of it is due to race. I don't think it's all of it by any means. I think, you know, if you're a Republican, he's a Democrat, you think this way, he thinks that way. He believes in this, you believe in that. That's ordinary American politics. But you cannot escape, at least I don't think you can, knowing that some of this opposition to him is rooted in his race, and that if he were not a black person, it wouldn't be at this level.
We're visiting with Julian Bond, one of this country's great civil rights pioneers. You know, the president's been criticized by some for not pursuing legislation related to the plight of minorities around the country. Do you fault him for that?
A bit. I understand his reluctance to do so. He doesn't want to be the black president in the sense that he is thought of by some people as being interested only in black people, only in our welfare, only in helping us. At the same time, we suffer to a greater degree from maladies, not illnesses I'm not talking about, but conditions different from those of other Americans. And as a consequence, we need some special attention. And I wish he'd give a little more special attention to people of color. I'm a little disappointed that he has not.
Do you expect more of that in his second term now?
I would hope so. But, you know, as long as these Republicans can only say one word, and that's no, he's going to have just a hard way to go. If he proclaimed that he wanted to go forward with naming Mother's Day every day, they'd say no. If he said, end poverty in America, they'd say no. I mean, they'd just say no. They can't think of anything to say except no.
Have you had a chance to look him in the eye, Julian Bond, and just ask him point blank, where are you when it comes to reaching out and doing more for minorities in this country?
If I had a chance, you know, I've met with him a couple of times, two or three times, and never had a chance to ask him that question. Maybe I will next time I see him.
Hmm. You know, you get a sense, and we've talked about this idea on this program any number of times, that the great hope in this country when it comes to race relations is, you know, younger folks who seem, you know, far more at ease with people of different backgrounds, of different colors. Do you see that too, Julian, and what do you make of it?
Yes, I do see it. You have to understand that younger people don't carry the same kind of racist baggage that their parents and grandparents did. That's not to say that every young person in America is clear of this. I'm sure there's some prejudice and bigotry among them, too. But the degree is much less than is true of their elders. And that's a lucky portent for us. That's a happy thing for us to consider as we go older and as the country grows.
Julian Bond speaks at noon on Tuesday at the Sheraton Crown Center Hotel downtown. This is all part of Kansas City's annual observance and celebration of the Reverend Martin Luther King's birthday. For tickets, visit sclckc.org or call 816-241-8100. And I'll give that information out again later on this hour. You told my colleague Glenn Rice at the Kansas City Star that the civil rights movement is alive and well, but it never had enough supporters and it doesn't have them now. Are you saying it didn't even have enough supporters back in the 1960s?
Oh, no. The popular notion is that everybody was involved in the civil rights movement. And, of course, you can stop people on the street who are, say, my age, I'm in my 70s, and say, were you in the civil rights movement? I don't care who they were. Oh, yes, I was there. I marched with Dr. King. If everybody who says they marched with Dr. King marched with Dr. King, the whole country would have been marching with Dr. King. And we know that wasn't true. So there were a healthy number of people involved in this and engaged in this, and that's for the good. But it was never enough then, and it's not enough now.
And there's not enough now. Why? Is it because, I'm just guessing here, the struggle for civil rights, it's more difficult now because it's racism is more subtle, it's more hidden, and that's made it a tougher thing to galvanize people to rise up against?
Yes, those things are true. And it's also true that many people think all these problems have been solved. It's all over now. We have laws to take care of these things. Dr. King died in order that we can have these laws. So there's nothing really to be done now. But, of course, there's a great deal to be done. There's still divisions between the races. You only have to look at census data and see that there's great difference between black Americans, Hispanic Americans, and on down the list. So as long as these differences exist, we've got more to do.
If you want to join our conversation with Julian Bond, this is your chance to do so. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Again, 816-235-2888. You can also email us at uptodate@kcur.org or tweet us at @kcuruptodate. Julian Bond, you've said the new civil rights agenda includes immigration reform, jobs, affordable health care, unemployment benefits, and ending voter suppression among minorities and young people. Let's talk just about voter suppression for a moment in states like Kansas that have passed legislation requiring voters to show a government-issued ID card. What do you make of that practice?
Well, I make of it as an attempt to keep some people from being able to register and vote. You know, racial minorities generally tend not to have the access to driver's licenses and the kinds of government-sanctioned identification that these laws require. And if that's true, that means a portion of African Americans aren't going to be able to show up at election day and say, here I am, my name is John Smith, and here's the proof of that. And I think in many instances, the people who craft these laws know that to be true. They know it's true about people of color. They know it's true about older people. They know it's true about a section of the population that typically votes for the Democrats rather than the Republicans. And therefore, they've ginned up this fantasy of mass voter fraud in the United States. And, of course, that's just absolute BS. There is no such thing, or not to any degree, that we need to have these draconian laws to fight it. And so you can only imagine that these are to keep people from voting. That's all they are.
What else on this agenda, this civil rights agenda these days, immigration reform, jobs, affordable health care, what's number one in your mind these days?
It's hard to say that one is number one. I think all of them are important and probably equally so. Probably immigration reform is near the top because it's something we've struggled with for a long time but haven't been successful with. And it looks like to me, unless there's something happens in the Congress this year, it's not going to be successful anytime soon. I'll tell you one thing that bothers me a great deal that isn't given much attention at all to, and that's housing segregation. Mm. We have laws against housing segregation. It's against the law to deny a rental or a house to purchase to somebody because of their color or their race. But nonetheless, if you go to any city, you go to Kansas City today, black people live over here, the white people live over there.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I want to talk about your own history with the civil rights movement, Julian Bond, because it's just so interesting. You've done and seen so much. I'm just wondering, you know, in 1960, when you first sort of started out on your journey with the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, if you could have projected ahead what is it, 50 years, 53 years now, and see where we are today with Barack Obama as president, but with some of the issues that are still on the table here, what would you have made of it, do you think? Happy, satisfied, dissatisfied? What do you think?
I had no idea when I started out in this that, number one, if it would take so long, the struggle would still be ongoing. I believe that it would be solved, that many of the problems we face then would have vanished and gone away. Of course, I was young, and I was also terribly naive, but I'm surprised to find myself at age 74, and I have a birthday tomorrow. I'm spending my birthday in Kansas City.
Well, happy birthday. It would be good to have you here. We'll trot out the red carpet for you, Julian.
I just want a few songs. I'm sure that it'll be a happy occasion. Anyway, if you had told me when I was a college student and just began to be active in this movement that I'd still be at it today, I'd say, no, you're crazy. No way.
816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Let's go to some calls here. Let's go to Walter from New York. Walter, good morning.
Good morning. I'm passing through Kansas City, turn on the radio, and was surprised to hear Julian Bond, who's been a hero of mine since he came to my middle school in 1968, and I got a chance to ask him some questions, and he's been an inspiration since. I have a question for you, and the question would be regarding incarceration. Could you talk a little bit about what's happening in incarceration rates between whites and blacks, and what do you think is happening, and what might be a solution if there's a deep down problem there?
Well, you're from New York?
Yes, sir.
Well, you know, there's big controversy in New York about these stop and frisk laws, which in New York City and in other cities are predominantly aimed at people of color. Hundreds of thousands of black people stopped by police, searched, and turned loose because they've done nothing wrong and they have nothing on them that makes them wrong. But this kind of pointing at people of color and saying you've done something criminal because of how you look, I mean, that just increases the number of people who eventually end up behind bars. Sometimes they're guilty, sometimes they're not. There's a propensity in this country among police people, I think, to assume that this person needs to be suspect, because of his or her race. And as long as that's true, you're going to have disproportionate numbers of people of color going into jail, going into prison, being punished for one thing or another, true or not. And that's part of the reason these rates of incarceration for people of color are greater than for people who are white.
Hmm. Can I ask a follow-up?
Yeah, go ahead, Walter. Sure.
Sure. So I was actually thinking in terms of drug laws and the nonviolent drug laws. And now that we're seeing some areas of the country that are starting to legalize marijuana, would this lessen a differential in incarceration rates for nonviolent crime?
Oh, absolutely. It's good news that Colorado and Washington State have loosened their laws about marijuana because, you know, millions and millions of Americans use it. It is less harmful than liquor. But, of course, there are no restrictions of the same kind against liquor as there are against marijuana. And if you're going to see a real reduction in the number of people going to jail because of these marijuana laws, new marijuana laws.
Walter, thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much.
Yeah, bye-bye. You know, Julian, you were one of the first African Americans elected to the Georgia House of Representatives, but you were barred from taking your seat because you opposed the Vietnam War. Take us back to those days. What was that all about?
Well, you're right. I opposed the war. It just seemed to me foolish. We were fiddling in somebody else's business. We had no business telling the Vietnamese how they should run their business, how they should run their government. It was not our concern. They had not attacked us. They had not any. It's like the Iraqi war, you know. The Iraqis didn't do anything to us, but we instead attacked them and lost so much of our own treasure, so much of our young men and women. It's just a tremendous tragedy. But that was the same thing that was happening in Vietnam then. And I think sensible people said, we just don't need to be involved in this.
But they actually said, you can't take your seat because you opposed the war?
Yes, they said I was unpatriotic and I guess that meant that I couldn't serve in the legislature.
And your case wound up all the way in the U.S. Supreme Court. That's what it took to get you seated back then?
Yes, and I was sitting in the front row of the spectators' benches in the Supreme Court, and the Attorney General of Georgia was speaking and telling the court that they need to keep me out. And Justice Byron White from Colorado said, "Is that all you have? You come all this way, and that's all you have?" And I punched my lawyer who was sitting next to me, and I said, "We're winning, aren't we?"
That was a good sign, eh?
Absolutely.
You know, Martin Luther King Jr. actually organized a rally to support you during that time. I'm wondering, you know, you knew Martin Luther King. I always had this impression that he would have been a fun guy to hang with. Tell us about him.
Well, he was a fun guy to hang with. He liked to tell jokes. He liked to tease people. And, you know, he taught me. There are a lot of people who will say I was a student of Dr. King's, but he only taught one class. Only eight people in the class. I'm one of the eight. So I'm one of eight people in the whole universe who can honestly say I was a student of Dr. King's. I'll tell you, one day after class, we were walking away, and I said to him, "Doc," his friends called him Doc. I said, "Doc, how you doing?" He said, "Julian, I feel not too good, not too well." He said, "Unemployment is high and segregation is everywhere." He said, "I feel awful. I have a nightmare." I said, "No, Doc, turn that around. Try I Have a Dream." And, well, the rest is history.
No kidding. No kidding.
Yeah, kidding. I'm kidding.
That's not bad.
I made that up.
Yeah. Well, what was he like as a teacher? What was that experience like for you?
Well, one thing that just really struck me, he co-taught this class with the man. It was a philosophy class. He co-taught the class with the man who had taught him philosophy when he was a student at Morehouse College. And probably this other guy knew more philosophy than Dr. King did. It was, after all, his livelihood, and this was just an interest for King. But I remember one day King was reading from the textbook, something by Plato, and he began to recite, and he looked up. So he was reciting from memory, and he went on and on and on from memory. And I was just staggered by that because I couldn't do that then. I can't do it now. It was just amazing.
And so you followed him through his career. I mean, his career had its ups and downs. Where did you think he was headed in the 60s as he reached the time of his death? Where was he headed in your mind?
Well, he was in the process of trying to build an interracial coalition of people for the Poor People's March on Washington. That was his thing that brought him to the attention of James Earl Ray, who shot and killed him, and the thing that raised the ire of some Americans. But I think had he not been killed, had he been able to go forward with this, he would have continued as a major, major figure on the American scene, and he'd still be reminding us of what we have yet to do.
Let's go to some phone calls here, and Sonia from Gladstone. Sonia, you're on Up to Date. Our guest today, Julian Bond, a great civil rights leader. Good morning.
Good morning. I am so happy to hear his voice, and I want to wish him happy birthday. But I want to make one comment, and the comment is, the most profound speech that I ever heard Martin Luther King make was the anti-Vietnam War speech.
Oh, well.
Tell us about that speech, Sonia.
I remember when I first heard it, it was after Martin Luther King was passed. I was living in California. And when I heard that speech, I had never heard Martin Luther King sound so passionate about anything, especially being against the Vietnam War. A lot of people got killed. I'm in my 60s. I lost a lot of friends. I had a friend that actually came back really terribly injured, because he was on Hamburger Hill. So that Vietnam was not should have never been our war.
No, and you know, King gave that speech at Riverside Church in New York City, and it was just a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful speech. Probably nowhere nearly as well known as his I Have a Dream speech.
But you're recommending it.
I know, but and like I say, when I compare the speeches to me, that speech was, I mean, it like I say, I heard it actually. The first time I heard it, like, it was about 10 years ago, and I was living in California, and it was like they were celebrating Martin Luther King's birthday. And like you say, it's not nearly well known, but it was so profound and so beautiful and so deep. And because I came up during the Vietnam War, and I was so affected by losing so many people that I went to school with.
Yeah.
And my husband was almost on his way to Vietnam. So I can say that God, you know, God bless Martin Luther King, and I'm just so happy to talk to you, even though I know you're not there at the station, but God bless you and happy birthday.
Thank you.
Sonia, thank you for the good call. You know, Julian Bond, in 1960, you helped organize the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, which comprised, you know, really worked on college, you know, was comprised of college students, and it was known for holding lunch counter sit-ins around the South. Do you recall one of those sit-ins? And I'm wondering, how did folks who worked behind the lunch counters react when you guys would come in the door?
Oh, I can recall the very first one, which was at the Atlanta City Hall cafeteria. I walked in. I was leading a group of about 20 students, men and women, and we went through the steam tables, which were populated by these black women who were serving the food, and they looked at us with a mixture of fear and admiration. Fear, because they knew what was happening. This was going to be one of those sit-ins they'd read about in the newspapers. Mm-hmm. It happened in other places, but now it's happening before their very lives. And admiration, because they were proud of what we were doing and happy we were doing it.
How nervous would you be when you would walk in the door and begin one of those sit-ins because you didn't know what the consequences might turn out to be?
I knew we would be arrested. And I didn't know how the police would treat us. It turned out Atlanta was a place where the police, generally speaking, treated people well. And so nothing untoward happened. But it was a little fearsome, you know, a little worrying. What are they going to do?
I was going to say, when the police would walk in the door, that was sort of the moment of truth, wasn't it, to some degree or another?
No turning back.
Yeah. You know, these days, this group of folks who was in the vanguard of the civil rights movement in this country, so many folks now reaching a certain age, you wonder how much longer so many will be with us. What needs to happen to have their story told? What else needs to happen to get that story out there, Julian, before it's too late?
Well, you need to record their stories, and thankfully, many of them have been recorded. Many of these pioneers, these people who were in my generation, who marched, who protested, who went to jail, many of them have had their records, their stories recorded. And so that's already there. But there probably are many, many others who haven't had a chance to have their story told or written down or even recorded, and that badly needs to be done.
Is it happening?
It is happening. People are doing it. I'm sure schools are doing it. Children do it. I teach a class at American University where I make students go out and find somebody who was active in the movement in the 1960s and record that person's life story or story of their movement activism anyway. And generally, they go to people whom I've never heard of before, I've never met before. So there's an enormous universe of Americans who were active in the movement, and their stories need to be told.
Well, Julian Bond speaks at noon Tuesday. That's tomorrow at the Sheraton Crown Center Hotel downtown. This is all part of Kansas City's annual observance and celebration of Martin Luther King's birthday. For tickets, visit sclckc.org or call 816-241-8100. And Julian Bond, know what a pleasure it's been to have you. Thanks so much for taking some time with us today.
Thank you.